Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Christians know they live in two worlds, the visible one of everyday life and the invisible world of the Spirit. The two are often in conflict. Making it through that journey requires the motivation to endure it. And today, we'll begin a look at where we as believers are to find that motivation. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Erwin Lutzer continues a series on the invisible world, where battles are lost and won. Now, turn with us to Philippians chapter 3 as we listen to a message on being motivated by the invisible world.
The cross of Jesus Christ and the message that it represents has always clashed with popular culture. Come with me to the city of Rome, lying majestically along the Tiber River. It had been there for 800 years, and there was no reason to think that it might not be there for another 800 years. But in the year 420, Alaric the Goth overpowered the guards at the Salarian Gate, and the pagans trashed Rome. Rome was not totally destroyed, but it was greatly humiliated. 3 days later, the pagans left the area with their carts full of gold and silver and art and all the treasures of Rome. The question, of course, before the populace, understandably, was who is to blame? And the blame fell on the Christians. Now, in order for you to understand why the Christians would be blamed, we have to go back 100 years before that to 312, when Constantine crossed the Tiber River and he won the city of Rome. He won the battle. And he decided that from that time on, Rome was going to be Christian rather than pagan. He had his own soldiers baptized in the river, conquered supposedly in the name and the symbol of the cross, and from now on, Rome was Christianized. How do you think the pagans felt about this imposition of Christian values and a Christian message in ancient Rome? They were quite unhappy. Some, of course, didn't convert to Christianity, even though there was a great deal of pressure on them to do so. Some others converted, but they brought their own pagan ideas into Christianity. For example, Rome had a god, a god if you were going to buy something, a god if you were going to sell something, patron gods that were used to protect you from the inclement weather or whatever. And these actually came into Christianity in the form of saints. So you have this saint and that saint. But as a matter of fact, because of this imposition of Christianity in ancient Rome, the pagans said, "Christians, it's your fault. Our pagan gods would have protected Rome better than your, quote, Christian God." In order to understand that and the backlash, let us suppose that here in America, the zealots, the Christian zealots, finally got what they wanted. We had a Christian Congress, a distinctly Christian president, a Christian Supreme Court, and we Christianized Washington. Then let's suppose that we had the worst financial disaster in American history. You can imagine what all the people were saying. "It's your fault, you Christians. Look at what you did. This happened on your watch." Well, that's what was being said about the ancient Christians. So in order to defend Christianity and to give some understanding as to what happened, a man by the name of Augustine, sometimes pronounced Augustine, wrote a very famous book entitled The City of God. And what Augustine said is that there are really two cities. At first there was only one, but after the fall of man, there are now two cities, and these cities run along concurrently. Eventually, they will be separated in the final judgment. There is the city of man that represents all of his hopes and dreams and everything that he could have ever asked for. That is the city of man. But then there's also the city of God. And the city of God has its values and it has its trajectory and it has its motivation. It is an unseen city. Now, said Augustine, because there are two different cities, there are also two different inhabitants or two different citizens. When Rome was sacked, Augustine said that the members of the city of man lost everything because this is just their hopes and dreams. This world is all there is. But the members of the city of God, they lost too, but nothing really eternal. Because they look for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. To look at it in a contemporary way, when homes were burned in Colorado during those terrible, terrible fires, you had some people who were members definitely of the city of God. Rebecca and I know someone who's a very well-known Christian whose home was burned up. Probably many Christians and probably those who had no interest at all in any religion, members of the city of man. So the point is that both experienced tragedy, but the members of the city of God, they lost nothing eternal because they look for an invisible city. As the old song used to go, this world is not our home, we're simply passing through. Now the question is, how do we live and manage this idea of living in both cities, being citizens of heaven as well as citizens on earth? In order to help us navigate this, I'm going to ask that you take your Bibles and turn to Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3, where the Apostle Paul gives us a description of the city of man. But in the process, we're going to find out how we can impact the city of man and how we should do it. You'll notice that the Apostle Paul, after he talks about there are enemies of the cross, this of course is in verse 18 of chapter 3. He says in verse 19, their end is destruction, their God is their belly, their glory is in their shame, their minds are set on earthly things, and we're going to look at what all that means in just a moment. But notice in verse 20, but our citizenship is in heaven. The Greek word is polytuma. Our politics is in heaven. Our citizenship is there. But of course, Paul was also a Roman citizen. And just like many of us, most of us, I'm sure, we are American citizens, but we're also citizens of heaven. How do we manage it? Throughout history, there have been a couple of answers to this. Some people have said that what the city of God has to do is to capture the city of man. And what we need to do is to Christianize the nation by populating Washington with Christians. Now, that has many, many difficulties. It'd be wonderful, wouldn't it, if this wasn't a message, if we could just kick back and talk about these things one-on-one or in small groups, what that would mean. But I simply caution you, don't go there as quickly as some of you might want to. But that's one view. The other view is to say that what we should do is to isolate ourselves. What we have to do is to realize that the city of man is on its way to destruction, and so we'll have our Bible studies, we'll help the saints, we'll raise good families, and we will isolate ourselves from the great controlling realities that take place in the city of man, and we'll be exempt from all of the struggles. That's another possibility, and in church history, some have taken that view. I'd like to suggest today that there is a better view, and that is of engagement with the culture and navigating this challenging assignment of belonging to two different cities and two different citizenships. So what I'd like to do is to give you a contrast now between the city of man and the city of God, four different contrasts, and then to challenge all of us asking the question, how do we navigate this very interesting responsibility? First of all, the Apostle Paul is saying that we must realize that members of the city of man, It says, "Brothers, join me in imitating me and keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example you have in us. For many of whom I have often told you, and now tell you even weeping with tears, they walk as enemies of the cross of Christ." Let's just stop there. First of all, members of the city of man and the city of God are walking in different directions. You and I are looking at the cross of Jesus Christ, and we see there God at his best, if I may speak so imprecisely, because God is always at his best. But it is here that we see the attributes of God. To us, the cross is absolutely essential. The Apostle Paul says that to those who are perishing, the word of the cross is foolishness, but to us which are saved, it is the power of God, and it is the wisdom of God. And what our responsibility is today is to challenge the world's opinion of the cross. Now, there are many ways that you can be an enemy of the cross, many different ways. For example, one way is to simply deny the cross altogether, and billions of people in this world do right now. For example, our friends in the Islamic community, according to the Quran, Jesus was not crucified. He did not die. He was captured by God and taken to heaven. So you have that. You have denying the cross. You have replacing the cross. And we see this oftentimes in many different ministries on television where there is a health and wealth gospel rather than the clear message of the cross of Jesus Christ, which is really what people need to hear because it is the power of God unto salvation.
My friend, this is Pastor Lutzer. If you listen to Running to Win for any period of time, you know that our emphasis is always the gospel. It is always the cross. You know, I personally am burdened, and I'm sure you are as well, about the fact that, by and large, we are not passing our faith to our children and our grandchildren. I hold in my hand a very special book that we are making available to you only this week. It's entitled Awesome Bible Verses Every Kid Should Know and What They Mean. It deals with 30 different topics of Bible doctrine that range from God, creation, the devil, forgiveness, justification, redemption, for children ages 6 to 12. We believe that this resource will be of great benefit to you. It's wonderful to see the way in which God has used it in so many different lives already. And I know that when it is in your hands and you read it to your children or let them read it, they will be blessed and strengthened in the faith. Just this week, we're making this available to you, Awesome Bible Verses Every Kid Should Know and What They Mean. We believe it will help you in your desire to get the Word of God to the next generation.
You've heard Erwin Lutzer introducing Motivated by the Invisible World, the fifth of eight messages in a series on the invisible world. Next time, more about the fundamental differences between the cities of God and man. Awesome Bible Verses Every Kid Should Know was authored by Rebecca Lutzer and is our gift to you when you support Running to Win with a gift of any amount. This book is only available this week, so call today at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about awesome Bible verses. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.